You are listening to The Vitals, a monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncologynursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Hi, everyone. This is Lindsay Fisher, Associate Editor at Oncology Nursing News. For this episode, we spoke with Kate Esselin, MD, Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, about patients with gynecologic cancer who don't comply with prescribed treatment as a result of financial distress or toxicity. Dr. Esselin is the corresponding author on the paper, Evaluating Meaningful Levels of Financial Toxicity in Gynecologic Cancers, which was published in the International Journal of Gynecologic Cancer. So I guess just to get started, would you be able to just introduce yourself and talk about sort of what inspired the research behind this paper?
Sure. So I am Kate Esselin. I'm a GYN oncologist at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, Massachusetts, which is affiliated with Harvard Medical School. And the research that we are talking about today surrounds financial toxicity in our gynecologic oncology patients. And really, the patients are the inspiration for this research. So, you know, I think every single one of us who takes care of patients, no matter what the field, but particularly in cancer care, has experienced or watched patients experience some degree of financial toxicity, whether we call it that or not. I just to use a few examples of, you know, patients that I can think of, patient stories that I've heard of my own patients and some of the patients we care for in our practice. You know, patients who delayed and avoided their care are obviously most concerning. Often the reasons are financial, that patients, you know, didn't seek care in sort of a timely fashion. Patients who, you know, in the most severe cases report that they can't afford their out-of-pocket medical costs, or as a result of having to miss work or miss wages, aren't able to pay their sort of basic household expenses like bills or food and basic needs. There are patients who report to us, you know, having wiped out their savings or even probably more distressing to our patients, having wiped out their kids' education funds and kids not being able to afford college or the college they'd hoped to go to. And lastly, one of not my own patients, but a close patient in our practice, you know, reported in her last months of life trying to figure out how she could divorce her husband so that he wouldn't be saddled with medical debt. So all of these patient stories, you know, these things all sound stressful to any individual out there, but add that on to potentially a terminal cancer diagnosis and all the toxicity and physical burden that that places on a patient, it seems like this is a problem that we could potentially solve. Or at least make much better. And we're not really doing enough right now to do that. So the work is inspired by the patients. There are a lot of really great people out there doing similar work in other areas and within GYN oncology. And so I hope collectively some of this work will inspire some interventions that will actually help our patients.
And in your experience, either through the research or your direct contact with patients, would you say that financial distress or financial toxicity is the primary reason that patients tend to not comply to the prescribed treatments?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I don't yet have that answer. In this last study that I just referenced, we asked a few different questions sort of around medication adherence or compliance, such as filling prescriptions, taking them as recommended. And we created this composite sort of medication non-compliance score or non-compliance yes, no variable out of that. And what we found is in patients who had the most severe financial toxicity, which in that by that definition in our study, it was of a score, you know, less than 15, those patients were 4.6 times as likely to report not taking their medication as prescribed or medication non-compliance is what we called it. And so certainly that was sort of shocking to us when we looked in the group with moderate toxicity as compared to the group with low or no toxicity, there was no difference in medication adherence or compliance. And so it does suggest that financial concerns might impact a patient's ability to take their medications as prescribed. It also, in other work we've done in the same, you know, using the cost tool again, we did find that patients with high financial toxicity were 7 times more likely to report delaying or avoiding their care than patients with low toxicity. So certainly it is affecting behavior, or one cost coping strategy is really sort of non-compliance with recommended medical care. And I'm sure that the reasons are varied between patients, but the underlying driver is ability to afford the care or its impact on their other sort of financial well-being.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I know in your paper you talk about a decent amount of different behavior cost coping strategies besides just medication non-compliance. Do you find, or did the participants report, that they start with less severe cost coping strategies and eventually transition into medication non-compliance, or are there a group of patients who that is the first thing they have to turn to?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So all of our work so far has been very much cross-sectional surveys at a point in time. We haven't yet done sort of series of surveys of the same patients, although the group down at UAB was working on that. And what they did find initially was that, you know, you will identify most patients who are experiencing financial distress, which is nearly 50% of our gynecologic oncology patients. And that's one out of every two, if you survey them early in their disease course and treatment, and that waiting, you don't necessarily pick up that many more patients, although obviously each individual patient has unique, you know, home circumstances. And so that may not be true for everyone. And I think it's going to be really important to address this with our patients at many different points in time. But what we do know from the work we've done is that the sort of what you would expect, natural sort of economic coping behaviors, where you change your spending habits, where you need to borrow money to pay for care, those things are happening in patients who have both severe distress and moderate distress. So definitely in patients with some degree of financial toxicity, your patients with the only moderate toxicity are sort of 5 times as likely to report borrowing money. Patients with severe toxicity are almost 13 times as likely. So these behaviors and borrowing money being a pretty significant indicator of financial burden, you know, are happening to patients at sort of various spectrums. So I think your question's a great one. Do people start by changing their spending habits and then borrowing money? And would there be a way to catch them at a certain point and sort of intervene before they get to the point where they're just not going to be compliant with care? I think that's probably true of some patients, but there's definitely going to be that group that shows up to their cancer diagnosis with severe financial hardship. Yeah. That we'll need to help, you know, from the beginning and make sure that they actually get to care instead of delaying and avoiding.
Okay, yeah. And finally, I know that the conclusion also talks about trying to implement resources to try and proactively reduce medication noncompliance or financial distress and therefore medication noncompliance. What resources and what sort of implementations does your team envision?
Yeah, so I think, as I mentioned earlier, we want to sort of screen our patients, and we're sort of mapping at our own local institution, you know, sort of what happens to these patients and where do they fall when issues are discovered, if they're discovered. And what we're seeing is that there's a lot of resources, but it's not so easy to connect our patients to them. I think the ideal circumstance, which some centers have been fortunate enough to implement, is to sort of have a financial navigation program where you have a team of folks, or maybe one person, who are sort of experts in connecting patients to the local resources, whether they'll be philanthropic sort of support to, you know, sort of insurance optimization, you know, if they're on a sort of underinsured, could be on a more, a better plan for their particular sort of needs. And then community resources and support, you know, with whatever their home burden is. So I think that financial navigation programs would obviously be the gold standard, and they are going to be somewhat unique to your local environment. So that's what's tricky about this, but figuring out a way to effectively screen and studying what sort of support and interventions and how that impacts patients' quality of life and their adherence to care are important next steps, because we may sort of learn what is the highest impact, lowest impact, and be able to more efficiently deliver support to our patients.
Thanks for listening to The Vitals, Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.